Hi, everybody. Welcome to our workshop. Really good to be here and really good to be able to share and be part of this particular workshop. My name is Donna. I'm from New Jersey, and I've been in program 11 years. I've lost 25 pounds so far and slowly but surely still going down on the scale. And my task here is to talk about obsession. And I think to start off, I have to just ask, what exactly does obsession with food mean? So for me, in a nutshell, it means eating more than is necessary, looking in the cabinets in between meals, thinking of food all the time, equating happiness with food, equating love with food, allowing food to take away from my relationships, because I want to be alone with my food, eating mindlessly through movies or when I'm watching TV or just grabbing at things because they happen to be in my periphery, whether I'm at work or at somebody's house. It's eating when I'm not hungry. It's just saying yes to food wherever it is. It's looking through other people's cabinets to see what they have in there and if there's anything that I want. All of these are incredibly compulsive behaviors. And it also is going through a whole bag of stuff in my house, okay, when my husband's not watching, and then replenishing the supply so that he doesn't know that it's missing. It's a very horrible place to be in because it takes away from life, it takes away from the present moment, and it never made me feel good about myself. It was the compulsion also for me was going on every diet plan in the world for decades, since I was 16 years old, looking for a quick fix, reading endless articles, watching every news story about miracle cures. It was seeing myself as a poster girl for every plan that I ever started. And after 3 days of sticking to it, thinking that I was going to be the next spokesperson. I could already see the billboard and I could see my name on TV and I can, show everybody the way. And it was really kind of insane because I got married. I was one weight and suddenly 30 years later, 25 years later, I was 100 pounds over that weight and did not even see it in myself because I would just look in a mirror from the shoulders up, or I would just look head on instead of sideways. I just thought they were making clothes smaller. And in reality, what I found is that I was eating for reasons other than sustenance. I was eating for reasons other than for my health. I ate for emotions, for feelings, if I had a good day, if I had a bad day, if I was hungry, angry, lonely, sad, depressed, happy, frustrated, if I wanted to fit in with people in a crowd, I would just eat whatever they were eating or drinking. I later found out that nobody really cares or notices what I'm eating in a crowd. They're just concerned with themselves. I'm there for the people. I'm not there for the company. I'm there for the moment of sharing time, not just sharing food. But I never knew until I came into OA that I was also feeding and fueling an addiction. And the compulsion was part of that addiction. So it was not my body and certainly not my higher self that wanted me to do that. But it was something that was really beyond my control. And I needed the help of the program to make me see that, to be with people who understood what their or what that was all about. And so there's so many things that were at play. And when I felt any of those emotions, restless, irritable, discontent, shame, remorse, guilt, it would trigger a memory. And I would relive that feeling over and over in my head and think or obsess about a food that would make me feel better or just have this repetitive thought, I need to eat, I need to eat. And then I would reach out for the food and I would take that first bite. And if it was something with an ingredient in it that spurred my addiction, in my case, it was sugar, and triggered my allergy, it would just cause more intense physical cravings, which led to binging. And that's what I would do until I would eventually stop, which was usually when the food ran out or when I felt sick. And I would make promises to myself that it would never, ever happen again. And it didn't until the next time. And those feelings would rear their heads and I would be back in the cycle all over again. And the truth was that the food never did solve anything. The only thing that would have solved it was working the steps when I recognized that those feelings, again, restless, irritable, discontent, shame, remorse, guilt, and I needed to key into them by doing my step work, recognize my own powerlessness, ask for help from a higher power, and doing what I can to clean my side of the street so that the feelings do not linger and they're not inside me, just literally eating away at me while I was eating physically on the outside. And sometimes too, like when I would feel feelings from long ago, things that hurt me, I had to remember that those things can only hurt me once. And every time after that, I'm choosing to let them hurt me over and over again. And that I needed to do something constructive to get past the feeling or the fear. And I have tools at my command. I have God. I have a higher power. I have a sponsor. I have text, email, reading, writing, literature, phone calls. I put them all into use before I take that first compulsive fight. And in effect, I short-circuit the feelings, I short-circuit the compulsion, and I eventually learn to run to those things instead of to food for comfort, reassurance, and love. I allow the program and my OA fellows and God to love me until I love myself, and then I'm on the way to being recovered and not compulsive. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Donna. And now Lisa is going to speak on the second freedom from insanity and hopelessness. You're on, Lisa.
Why, thank you. Hi, I'm Lisa. I am a grateful compulsive overeater. And I love to start out with that statement because I am grateful. So I threw caution to the wind when they asked me to speak. And I said, well, give me whatever ones you want, because that's me trying not to manage my life. I came into the rooms of OA in 2010, blaming God and the world for my misery, but hoping for some solution. I started with 5 years of abstinence, which included freedom from blame and freedom from so many things. And then I was in relapse for 4 years. And I currently have 3.5 years of abstinence. So step two, freedom from insanity and hopelessness. The principle for step two is hope. I'm going to define a few things. Insanity, something utterly foolish or unreasonable. Extreme foolishness or irrationality. And my favorite is Einstein's definition. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Hopelessness, a feeling or state of despair, lack of hope. Unable to be helped or improved. Desperation. All of these fit exactly where I was as I entered into this program. I've been dieting since I'm in grade school, exercising, dieting, exercising. I've been in weigh and pace since high school. I gained weight, I lost weight. So when I look at it from the perspective of food, crazy was my life. And the preoccupation with it was overwhelming. And I would have nice periods of grace in my life where I would be free from the obsession. And I found in those, in reflecting back, I was much more spiritual in my space when those things were happening, but I was still under my own willpower. And now I also look back and see that it was probably some exercise bulimia going on in there. Because that's how I was managing it. But I didn't recognize that till into my program for a while. I thought food was my only friend. It was the thing that was always there when I was having a hard day. Everything was overwhelming. Dropping keys was an event. Losing my keys was a bigger event. You know, and heaven forbid if I was living with somebody and I lost my keys, because now it's their fault that they're missing because they hid them or they moved them or somebody moved something or I opened blueberries and they fell on the floor. And now my day is ruined because the blueberries have fallen on the floor. So insanity, it doesn't even have to be the major stuff, you know, sitting in traffic and being angry because I'm in traffic. Like, I'm the only one in the world that's in traffic right now, not the other a bazillion people on the street. So it was really just obsessing over everything. And it was always obsessing about how I looked, how much I weighed, what other people thought, where they were going, you know, what did they think of me? It was insane. I was crazy. And where did I find hope and the lack of insanity? Because I got to tell you, by the time I came in, I was suicidal every single day. I lived in Hawaii and California for 2 years as a traveling nurse, seriously living in Hawaii and still waking up every day wishing my life was over. That is insanity. So I found the program. First year, I tried to work it by myself. Insane, because I was in charge. I was in the driver's seat. I bought almost all the books, and I had a higher power, and I was spiritual. So I figured, you know, really, seriously, why do I need any middlemen? I'm just going straight to the top, letting the top work for me. So the two of us did it, you know, I did it. And then I gave, you know, my higher power instructions on the things that I wanted and needed and how it was going to be done. And about just shy of a year, well, I made it, I lost, I don't know, like 50 or 60 pounds. And I picked up something over a holiday, and the holidays are tough for me because I have a lot of loss in my life. And so the holidays kind of make that more glaring. Before I knew it, I'm picking up. I gained more than half my weight back in a few months. So I had Memorial Day weekend was tucked aside for me to binge my way away. I thought I bought all this food, enough of everything. I couldn't, wasn't enough food. I had to go shopping. And I found myself just out of control. So I came into program. I got a sponsor. I started doing, I want to get into the solution, so I'm sorry. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I did tons and tons of service. And here's where my ego tripped up. I wanted to keep doing the service because people were thrilled with it. Everything was great. Everybody wanted, you know, ooh, you know, go here, try this. And I was people pleasing and people pleasing. For 5 years, I was thinner. I looked good. I thought I was happy, but I was still trying to please everyone.
2 minutes, and Lisa.
Thanks, Donna. You're so welcome. What of course happened, I picked up, and I picked up two reasons. It was because my spiritual zone had gone, and it had probably never ever really gotten to where it needed to be, because I never really let step two show up. So I got to define my own higher power. It took me 4 years. I never left the rooms ever, ever, ever. And I kept my fellowship, and I kept seeking and trying and working. I, you could still hear it was all me. But what ended up happening is I ended up having a nervous breakdown. I was in a treatment center for depression, inpatient and outpatient. My life pretty much crumbled all around me, as well as every single defense mechanism I had built up. And that's how I found step one. And then I've been working on step two for those years. And I really have a God, a higher power that I call God, but it's like, it's got everything in it. And what I do today is I wake up and I end my day in gratitude every single day. I've just moved to Massachusetts and relocated because I can. I have two friends here. I have absolutely no idea where I'm going or what I'm going to do next.
Lisa, honey, time.
I'm done?
Yes, you are, dear. Thank you.
Sorry. Thanks.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a challenge in 7 minutes. All right. Now, freedom three, freedom from bondage of self. We're going to hear Gittel speak. Thank you, Gittel.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. Gittel, compulsive eater and food addict. So grateful to be here. So, so grateful. Thank you for the privilege. Can I ask for like a 2-minute warning?
Absolutely.
Just so I know where my time's going. Thank you. So freedom from the bondage of self. So huge. So huge. I'm in program probably about 7 years. Gave away over 100 pounds. And really this is what keeps me here. And the freedoms correlate to, you know, the steps. So step three, which is freedom from bondage of self, is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And this is just has changed my life. You know, the rest of the steps are what I need to help this going, keep going. But the first three steps are really, you know, the letting go process. And I love the phrase that puts it so simply. I can't, God can, and I think I'll let him. And that has been just the entryway to such freedom in my life, because I didn't realize how much I was holding on to so tightly, trying to control everything on my own. I thought I had a higher power, but it was really just so about me. I didn't realize that, you know, he could help me with all the big and little things. Especially even more so the little things, you know, that took up so much space, you know, and just like trying to hold it all, you know, like the analogy one of my program friends gave that I think of all the time, you know, going up the steps, holding on to like anything and everything, because you don't, you know, you don't want to let go and you just want to go up once. So you're holding all your laundry and all your things and then you just drop them all, you know. And here is just this, you know, letting go. And we say it's simple, but it's not necessarily easy because we're so used to just trying so hard. We're so used to doing everything on our own and just trying to do it all. And that freedom is just so relieving when I can let go. And it's almost like if I feel it in my whole body, you know, like just let go. You feel like this space and this ear inside me, you know, like I can breathe, like just holding so tightly onto everything. And that's like that freedom from the bondage of self. And then just so many stories and program. And that's like a constant work. And when I came into program, I think, you know, like I heard about the 12 steps and I was like, oh, you take that step once and you're done, you know, like magic, 1, 2, 3. Cause of course that's what I wanted as a food addict, you know, like just easy, simple, you know, like I don't want to work hard. I just want it to come to me easily. So, oh, cool. You know, like I just say, let God, and then I'm done. But it's a constant process every day throughout the day of, you know, of letting go and remembering, like, it's not me that's doing this. I'm just a messenger here. And how freeing. It's so, so, so freeing. Just what comes to mind now that's so huge. I'm in the middle of a very high risk pregnancy. Now, thank God in my 8th month, but I've been on bed rest for the last 3 months. Actually it's more than 3 months now. And just, it's a miracle. It's like God prepared me for this. My higher power, who I call God, just, it's like, you know, oh, so many things that you think that you have power of and you're control, you know, you're in control of, and you just realize it's not me. It's really not me. And that's what I always needed the food for, because when I felt out of control, I just needed that food to make me feel better. Thank you.
2 minute warning here.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that freedom from self, is really, you know, how I can let go. I could pause. I could let my higher power, be in charge. It doesn't have to be me. And then you know, like it says in the big book, which is so powerful, when we're faced with indecision, we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. And that for me is just the biggest freedom, like that giving up of that fight. Like that is what this, you know, addiction has been to me, of needing to be in control, not being able to accept my reality, my feelings, you know. And that's what is so beautiful and powerful. If I can hand that over to higher power and just say, your world is perfect, you're doing this for me, and ask him for his guidance and not me. I don't know, you're handing me this. So I can just, you know, relax myself and just say, God, show me the way. And that's freedom. That's real freedom from self, because my little old self, I have no idea. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I don't know, like so many big things come your way. And it's just freedom to say, God, you show me the way. I don't need to do this myself. And that's, you know, what I really think is freedom from bondage of self for me. And just saying every day, God, please help me do your will. And I might have to say that, you know, 100 times a day, but that's really key. So thank you all.
Thank you, Gittle. Time is up. Perfect timing.
Thank you so much, Gittle. And now, freedom from dishonesty, we're going to hear from Christina.
Thanks so much. So nice to see so many familiar faces. Donnelly, can you let me know when a minute?
1 minute? Okay.
When I have 1 minute to go. Thank you so much, honey. My name is Christina, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I've been in OA since May of 1981. I always ask higher power to help me say something that would be useful when I do this. And I'd like to begin with a breathing exercise that I do. And when we do this together, breathe down to your waist. So it's called Five Breaths to Sanity. So breathe in and breathe out and breathe in and breathe out and breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in peace. Breathe out the static. Breathe in peace. Breathe out the static. It's between the fourth and the fifth breath that the body downshifts. And the facilitator that taught us that, I don't know, I've used that in many instances, been very helpful for me. I was a fat kid, an obese teenager, fat young woman. As a teenager, I was 100 pounds more than the cute skinny girls in their mini skirts in my neighborhood. I was a nervous kid, and my answer to every situation was to eat. When I was happy, I ate. When I was sad, I ate. When I was bored, I ate. Eventually, eating became my response, my go-to behavior for living. So it wasn't just a little diet I needed when I came here. It was restructuring my whole way of responding to living. And I knew from the first meeting that this was my tribe. I love the people that qualified at those meetings, because when they told their story, my heart heard the truth. I used to think, God, I can never be that honest. And I love them for their honesty. And we developed the capacity to be honest here by working the steps. It said, Joe McHugh used to say that the experience we have with each of the steps gives us the power to work the next step. So in step one, we admitted we had a problem and asked for help. And step two came to believe that some force outside myself could help me to see the truth. Step three is about making a decision to turn my thoughts and my actions over to the care of that power as I understand it. Act as if that will help, even if I don't believe it. Step four is determining how my thoughts, actions, feelings, resentments have shaped my life and this day that I'm living in today. So, to be honest, I have to take a good look at what hasn't worked and what my part is in that, because those feelings and attitudes cause me to want to eat. They take away the peace in my heart and separate me from the source of all good. which I like to call big love. When I do a fourth step, I write the truth down as honestly as I can. And my sponsor is the loving witness I take the truth to. But if I heard somebody say one time, if I've been hiding and making excuses for my character defenses all these years, I might only be able to see the truth that I understand, my version of the truth. Christian Northrup used to say there are three kinds of truth: your truth, the other person's truth, and a truth that we can find as we work to figure things out. So those things that don't work are what I'm going to talk about with my sponsor: the resentments, the fears, the harms I might have done or participated in. I prefer the three column, not the three columns, it's more than that, inventory that they mention in the book. It has bullet points on what happened, what affected my part, my character defenses that were in play at the time, where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened or inconsiderate. An example was, if I was critical of my husband, was I self-seeking, wanting things only my way? Or was I frightened he was going to make a mistake with money or something else? So that critical, I'm going to put on that fourth step, because that's an adjective that tells me the exact nature of how I expressed I was fearful or selfish. That's the problem. And if whatever I haven't been doing causes negative results, then it's not working. If I want to have a different life, I have to do things differently. This is where I get honest and find out what I need to change. First, I admit my part in the situation, and sometimes that really pinches. But nothing changes unless I own it and identify it. On the last fourth step I did, a sponsor had me just read the fifth column. And after the second page of reading those adjectives, I started to giggle because the person changed, but some of the behaviors were still there. So having looked at those things, I can try to practice doing things differently. Sometimes I sing the snarky song when the aggravation, thank you so much, Donna Lee, is coming up my back. And that is, feeling snarky, oh so snarky. God, please help me keep my mouth shut. Sometimes I call a program friend while the steam is coming out of my ears. And sometimes I write things down. Writing, if I have the time, helps me go from the problem to the solution. The person may still be a pain in the ass at the end when I put down the pen, but I can make a decision at that point in time how I want to respond as a person of integrity. The beauty of this program is that we learn we have choices and we have a safe environment to practice new things and people who want us to be well. And we get it for free here. So if you have a problem with food and you are new, stay with us. There's so much healing that happens as we work the steps. Joe McHugh used to say, each person's recovery is as individual as his fingerprint. Stay with us and find yours. Thanks, I pass.
Thank you so much, Christina. And now we're moving on to freedom. Five, freedom from isolation. And Paula will tell us about that freedom.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paula. I'm a compulsive overeater. Nice to see you all. Donna, I'll take a 3-minute warning.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't believe there's almost 100 of us here. Like, I could feel the energy coming through my Mac. It's amazing. And I'm definitely not feeling isolated right now. I'll tell you that. And even just sharing like this, not in a million years before my recovery, I would have never done something like this amongst all of you. So I'm very thankful, but I'll start with some of my information and my background. I came into the program in January of 2006. I did not get abstinent until April 20th of 2008. So this year I'm celebrating 14 years. And I've been maintaining somewhere between about a 40 to 45 pound weight loss. And my face-to-face home meeting was Red Bank, and still is as far as virtually Saturday morning Red Bank meeting. So happy to meet you all and see some familiar faces. So isolation. So this illness definitely kept me separate from the world, right? Like eating took up a lot of my time. Binging took up a lot of my time, and it didn't involve anybody else in the outside world. And it certainly did not involve the grace of God or God's presence. There was just one choice for me. There was no fork in the road, divine power as such. It was food. And, you know, I ate in secrecy. It was part of my behavior, even though you could see my illness on my body, but which, you know, was delusional as far as I was concerned, because I really did think that I could live this dual life of, you know, the outside world versus what was going on inside of me. But I remember what was most painful was the binging that went on at night. I spent a lot of time, more time than I care to admit, waiting for everybody in the house, whether I was, you know, because I've got abstinent in my mid-30s, but every time in my life, whether I was with my immediate family, my mother, father, I have two brothers and a sister, even being married, like just waiting for everybody to go away, to go in, you know, to go to bed, I would eat and then I can do my thing. And this was just putting this wall up and just keeping me separate from everybody else so that I could basically do what I found to be the most relaxing and take the edge off kind of thing, which was what I used, which was essentially food. But the isolation did more than that. I had a traumatic childhood, and that's where the eating disorder showed itself for the first time. But what happened was I just really separated from everybody, even though, you know, I'd walk amongst, it was just this me against the world and keeping everybody at arm's length. And that kept me isolated, not just when I would binge, but even in my thinking. And it was very painful. It was very painful. So because I kept these secrets, right? The illness was a secret as far as I was concerned, even though you could see the weight on my body. And I would fluctuate all the time, whether I was doing a diet or when the diet didn't work, you know? But inside, I just thought that I would, it was something that I couldn't, there was just no option for me to share with anybody. So it just kept me very separate from everybody else. And then the trauma that I experienced as a child kept me even more so distant from anybody. I had friends, I had two brothers and a sister and a mother and father, but there was just real no connection. The connection wasn't there. I couldn't really trust in my mind. I couldn't trust anybody. And so I dealt with all that pain with food. And so, and I isolated that way. It was a really painful, painful time when I say it out loud to you all, but here's the good news. I don't live like that anymore. I don't. And I'm so thankful for that. And what the steps and the tools are designed to not isolate, right? Like it keeps us connected. I mean, essentially my recovery depends upon connections with other humans, with God, more importantly, probably, you know, I mean, the step that this is dedicated to the fifth step, and it says admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. So in order for me to stay recovered, I have to have one hand in God's and the other hand in programs. You know, it's designed for me not to connect with other people, because I believe part of this program, one of the most important aspects of it is the relationships, staying connected to myself, staying connected to God and to other human beings. And if I'm working these steps, if I'm staying abstinent,
3 minutes, and, Paola.
Thank you. And if I'm working the tools, you know, I'm connecting. I'm doing the opposite of isolating. And I'm not perfect. There are days where, you know, I default to that personality and that way of living. I want to go, I just don't want to call somebody. I don't want to call in my food. I don't want to get on a meeting. Like I have those days, you know, But I know that if I, you know, part of the reason I think I've been abstinent for a long time too, is because I don't do everything that my mind tells me. I do actually the exact opposite. As soon as there's something that comes in, I now have this barometer, this kind of sense of knowing that that's not good for me. It would not be good for me if I didn't get on that call. Or it would not be good for me if I did not send this food plan in. So I am really thankful. And I do my best to tell the truth all the time. And more importantly, not just tell the truth, but not withhold information, which is something that it was very chronic, you know, secrets was what I kept. And I kept everybody at arm's length. And I choose not to live that way for today. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Paula. And now moving on to Freedom 6, Freedom from Running the Show. We're going to hear from Lusk. Lusk, you're on mute. There you go.
I'm holding forth, telling you all kinds of good stuff, and you can't hear it, right? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, let me back up. Very good to be here. I really have enjoyed this share so far, and I've learned so much. I'm sitting here thinking about what I'm going to say. Maybe I'll say this, maybe I'll say that when I get these new ideas. We live in Manchester, which is just west of Toms River. I've been in program about 13 years. I have a total weight loss of somewhere between 120 and 140 pounds. I never was too sure what my original weight was. I remember 268. My wife says it was closer to 368. My wife says it was closer to 400. So I've lost some weight. What I have appreciated so much about Overeaters Anonymous, and what I'm so thankful for, is that it has stayed off. Before OA, I was in the diet plan, diet programs, particularly Weight Watchers, and just yo-yoed up and down and up and down. I would lose weight, then I would put that weight back on, then more. It was crazy. As far as running the show, what a wonderful theme. I first learned to run the show and hide from what I remember in about the third or fourth grade. I remember clearly going to the refrigerator after dinner, pulling out food that was left over and eating it. I also remember eating clearly with a goal to stuff myself. Not because I was hungry, but I wanted to fill myself. This was because I was engaged at that time in some child behaviors, and I felt guilty about it, and I didn't know what to do with it, and I turned to eating. Now, that predisposition may have been there earlier because my behaviors certainly go back to early times, but this is the earliest one I can remember. Over my lifetime, I still do the same thing. To this day, if I'm in an emotional situation or under stress, my first thought is food, right? The complaint, when I was in Weight Watchers, one of the things that I found negative about the program was learning that if I was successful, then I could eat more, right? Because with me, all you have to do is tell me that, and you know what I'll be doing. I'll be eating more and more and more. With my early behaviors, I learned to hide. I learned to manipulate people. I learned to lie. I learned to manipulate situations. I learned to do all this in order to be able to eat. Lo and behold, later on in my life, when I could drive a car, I'm still manipulating people, manipulating situations, so I can drive off to a fast food place somewhere, right? You do enough of that long enough, and you're going to weigh 400 pounds. Lost opportunities. There were so many lost opportunities in my life because I spent so much of my time thinking about my addiction and so much of my resources went to my addiction. I lived basically two lives. One on the top level was normal, and the other level was my addiction. And I have to say, looking back on it, most of my energies went into my addiction. And of course, that affected my life. It affected my successes. It affected my relationships. It affected everything. And one day, guess what? I found OA. I had a friend who had a similar weight problem, and I saw he was losing weight. And I went up and asked him what he was doing, and he told me about OA. So I walked in the front. I walked in the door at my first meeting. Now, again, as a male here, I walked in the door. Here's this room filled with women sitting around a table. They all looked very thin to me, to my eye. I didn't see anyone there who had a weight problem. I thought maybe I had the wrong room. It turned out I was in the right place. And they were the most welcoming people I've ever known. I just felt like the arms had been just opened up and wrapped around me. It was amazing. And I just kept coming back. Worked the steps, went through a lot of again, as a guy running, went through a lot of kind of issues about getting a sponsor. I had two temporary sponsors up to the third step. Fourth step, we kind of hesitated on. And I think it was because of the sexual behavior part of the fourth step. And I too was kind of leery about that. With a female sponsor. Well, you know what? One day a friend of mine walked up to me and said, I'm sponsoring and I'd like to sponsor you if you're interested. And I said, sure. And guess what? I had a female sponsor that I could literally share everything with. Right? These things work out. I just think of the many times I might have gotten depressed and just walked away from it. And thank God I didn't do that. I stayed with it.
Two minutes.
Okay, left. Thank you. Thank you very much. The quotes, just quickly. Step six, of course, is the being entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of characters. The OA 12 and 12 says our energies are no longer bound up in our worries and resentments, and we are free to move forward again to do God's will. Worries and resentments, I tell you, they get turned over to my higher power. What a difference that makes. What a difference it makes in my life that I have a tool that I can do something. First of all, that I can recognize them, number one, but second of all, that I can take action and take the right action, and I can get some relief, right? It's just amazing. We have what we need anytime we're willing to let go of self-will and humbly ask for help. I ask for help every time I turn around. Someone previously had mentioned 100 times a day turning to their higher power. I agree, right? Because I've learned that rather than just go to him during the times of real stress and real serious situations, I go for everything now. I go for everything to my higher power. It just makes my life so much more real, so much more honest, so much more open. Because my higher power is a part of my life. And let's see. Oh, I don't have to run the show. Do I have a minute more? Or is that it?
Actually, that's it for now.
That's it. Okay. All right.
You can share later on when we're doing open share. I'd love to hear it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Les. And sure. Now we're moving on to Donna, who's going to speak about Freedom 7. Freedom from self-reliance. You're on again, Donna.
Okay. Hi, guys. Here I am again. Still compulsive, still an overeater. Hasn't changed yet. self-reliance. Okay. I looked it up in this dictionary before I started my share. It says reliance on one's own powers and resources rather than those of others. Self-sufficiency, self-support, self-standing, independence, confident in our own abilities and able to do things for yourself, not needing help from other people. You know what? That did not work so well for me. as with most character traits, this is an asset until it ratchets itself over to the defect column. And for all the years before I came into program, I thought that self-reliance was all that I needed. And like I said, I found myself extremely overweight, and I just couldn't understand how that was possible, because I knew everything about every diet on the planet. You know, every plan, I spent so many hours reading and writing and finding the next miracle solution. And each time I would lose the weight, and then I would eventually go off that diet train and the pounds would come roaring back, usually a couple more just for insurance. And I would say, oh, this plan is not working, so let me go on to the next miracle plan, because naturally it wasn't me. Let me just show more determination, more grit, less calories, less carbs, eat only on the weekends, don't eat during the week, do more exercise. There were 1,000 different machinations that my head would go through as to why the plan didn't work. It really was endless. So I saw the plans as the culprits, not me. And the fact was that I was trying to do everything alone. And I was making all these decisions by myself. Nobody sat on a couch and force-fed bonbons down my throat. You know, it just was me. So I would, at that point, of course, hop onto the next plan. And this went on for decades, up and down the scale, feeling good, feeling bad, depending on what the scale said. But then I found OA. And oh my God, the light came on so brightly. I found my tribe. And I realized that OA may not be a quick fix. It may not be a fad. What it really is a new way of life. And that was exactly what I needed. It could potentially bring me peace, both spiritually and physically, and also emotionally. And these people, when I first went into OA, they just got me from the get-go. I didn't have to explain. They just knew. So, they knew where I had been and where I wanted to go. And I saw in them a serenity that I wanted for myself. And I saw a neutralness around food, which I didn't have. There's a line in the big book about recoiling as if from a hot flame, you know, certain kinds. I couldn't even imagine that in the beginning. I couldn't imagine, you know, not drinking. I couldn't imagine not having sugar. But you know what? When I really looked into it and realized that those substances did not do anything for me except make me want more, there's an issue here. Okay. And as the program progressed and as I got deeper into the steps, I realized there were other things too. But those were my first big, you know, light on kind of moments that I had. So, I, you know, would face my food behaviors and realize that they were bringing me into a cycle of addiction. And I saw these people that were truly happy, joyous, and free, and I wanted what they had. And if they could do it, I could do it. It wasn't a competition. It was just an acknowledgement. And when I came to the realization that I was dealing with a disease of the mind and allergy of my body, I just hated the word disease. Okay, it had horrible connotations for me until I fully understood that it is dis-ease with what's going on in my mind, dis-ease with my emotions, my feelings, my vulnerability, guilt, shame, anger, remorse, frustration, boredom, all the things that led me to food for comfort. And then that once I started, if I allow myself to go into what I call my red light foods, the things that trigger that addiction in food or in drink, I find that I'm out of control. So that is why sponsor is so important in this program. And also the fellowship and phone calls that we make, because that second set of eyes allows me to see objectively into whatever is going on. And of course, when I ask for the help of a power greater than myself, I can make decisions that are for not only my betterment, but the betterment of everybody around me, be that power God, the OA group, the energy of the universe. It's the one thing that makes me feel secure in the knowledge that I am truly never alone, that none of us are alone ever, and that that power is coming from a place of love, kindness, helpfulness, and that I'm not focusing totally on myself. You know, there's a phrase about my own unsteady willpower. It is, but but it's not unsteady when I have all of you behind me. And I don't need to manage my life anymore. I don't need to run the show. I don't need to have all the answers. I'm able to sit back, let time take its course, and know that the best outcome will be the result. The bottom line is that self-reliance got me into trouble with food and life in the first place, thinking that I could do it on my own. And this stinking thinking brought me to the place where I thought that I could keep secrets hidden about what I did with food, when I ate it, why I ate it, and that it wasn't just for nutrition and sustenance. And it was also me thinking about me all the time. So in OA, I also found there were many other things that could help me out. They were tools, lots of them, reading, writing, literature, talking to my sponsor, going to a meeting, virtual or otherwise, using the telephone to call other OA fellows just to say hi and check in on them, truly caring about others, lending an ear to listen, but without trying to fix, manage, or control them and the outcome. And by doing that, it takes my mind off of myself and food and puts me into a higher level of living peaceful, serene, and calm. So I choose to live in the solution, not in the problem. And when I found my sponsor, I found somebody who had what I wanted. I made that connection. I did the steps and I did them all the way through numerous times now, but I did them all the way through. And there's something magical that happened sometime around step 11, where I realized what all the previous steps were leading to. And it was magical and beautiful and miraculous. It just all clicked. So I just wanted to also throw out the idea of a God box, another helpful tool for you, those of you who are new or those of you who don't know what it is. It's for me, it's a pretty little box with a blue celestial thing on it and a cover. Other people use a jar. But whenever I'm feeling things that I know are making me unsettled, I write down on a piece of paper those anxieties, fears, frustrations, relationship issues, and I put it in that box. And what it does is it gives me a place to put it. And I say I can take it back anytime I want, but it's like, you know, you handle this higher power. Let me know what the solution is later on down the road. But I leave myself open that it may not be the solution that I think it should be. It may be something even better. So also that it's not in my time and it's in the time of universe or God or the powers that be. It's just the physical act of letting things go and waiting for everything to align itself to that end. So it's the essence of the let go, let gone slogan that we have, which, you know, at one point in time suddenly made complete sense to me. So in conclusion, basically live in gratitude for this day, this hour, and this minute. Embrace the beauty that surrounds you. Let the relationship sustain you, your capacity to give and receive love. We have a thing in my home meeting. I'm going to put a gratuitous comment here about our 9 o'clock Saturday morning Flemington meeting. But we have something that we say in every meeting, which is, our actions may not yet show the warmth in our hearts for you, but you are welcome here. You may find that you may not like all of us, but you'll love and accept us in a special way, the way we already love and accept you. Let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the love of the program grow in you one day at a time. Initially, I hated that, but I have so grown to love that. As I've learned to love myself more, it makes me radiate out and be able to love others. So just use the tools of the program, listen to the hope and strength of other OA members, meditate to get to that quiet space, do those little 5-minute meditations. They're so critical to recovery. Breathe through pressures and anxieties and just know that you're never alone, that HP and your fellows are always here to protect and nurture you and your well-being. Life is a beautiful journey, and please enjoy the scenery along the way, as well as the final destination. Because as it says in the big book, we're always with you in the fellowship of the spirit as we trudge the road to happy destiny together. Thank you again for letting me share.
Thank you, Donna.
Welcome.
And next, moving on to Lisa again, she's going to talk about Freedom 8, Freedom from Blame.
Well, she's certainly going to try. Donna, 3-minute warning and a 1-minute warning, because I like to talk.
You got it.
And I can just shout out now the freedom from blame for me, because my first response was, I didn't practice enough. I wasn't prepared. I should have made it in 7 minutes. So I already started right on the blame train the second I finished the share before, because I didn't have enough time. Welcome to me. Here's the freedom. Old me would have shut down and probably not listened to anything else. And then would have been practicing my new, what was coming next. And hence insanity. And the new me, because of this program and because there's no blame needed anywhere. By the way, I could have come up with a whole bunch of other people I could have blamed for this too, in case you want to know. But there's no blame. And so step 8 is freedom from blame. Its principle is self-discipline. Blame is to find fault with and to hold responsibility. I see it as judgment, guilt. And I put that in here because feelings of deserving blame, especially for imagined offenses or from a sense of inadequacy. Ta-da! So, So basically I turned everything, as I mentioned earlier, everything was an event in my life, every single thing. And the blame was everywhere. I just had to blame somebody for something because it was too painful for me to accept blame. Unless I needed to control the situation, then it was easier for me to put the blame on myself and then play the martyr or the victim and the woe is me. And then that gave me lots of room to negotiate, because I'm really, really, I really, 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 really good at it. I was. I probably still am, but I don't use that tool that often. And when I do it, hence the self-discipline and the self-awareness that really comes with this program, is I don't need to, I don't go that far anymore. That's where it really comes in. My defects, man, they were honed to a very, very sharp point. I was known as very temperamental. People walked around on eggshells. When I was in a great space, I was in a great space, but when I wasn't, be careful. And really the early parts of my life, everything, everybody hates me. Nobody loves me. My car didn't start because I suck as a person. It didn't matter. I could come up with something. So the blame was either on me, or it was so easy to go back. Well, you know, I had a mother who didn't give me this. I had a home where we didn't have that. My teachers weren't good enough. My brother was smarter than me. Like I could go on and on and on and on and on and on. Hence the insanity. So see, my two tied together really nicely. It was really kind of crazy. And I could also, it was easy from a blame standpoint. I would just look at a situation and I knew what you were doing. I could see all your issues, bing, bang, boom, right up front.
3 minutes, my dear.
Thank you. Something I learned in this program, which was very painful, was you spot it, you got it. And I heard that at my very first Winter Dreams retreat many, 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 many. So that's almost 11 years ago, 11, 12 years ago. Well, acceptance is the answer. And that's the reality for me. That's how I deal with blame. I have learned to live in the solution. And the solution doesn't require blame anywhere. Nothing needs blame. My favorite line, it is what it is. I'm looking at something and 10 other people are looking at something and we're all seeing it through our own lives. So the truth is just not there. There's no real thing that's there. It's just what we perceive. So today I do step work. I do step work on an ongoing basis. Matter of fact, I'm doing step work like with the two new sponsees I have. with a longtime fellow that I do weekly with that I've been doing for years. And we just keep going and going and going. And then I found myself last night doing some step work because I was just looking to see what was going on for today. I have to use all the tools, not some of the tools, but all the tools. That's what's critical for me. And in using all those tools, I've been living in other people's houses for the last 3 years. I've lived alone for 25 years of my life. This has been an eye-opening experience. And it has been an opportunity to not blame anybody, not me or them. And I don't do this perfectly. I don't have this freedom in every second of every day, but God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to do your will, because I know, not mine. The AA 12 and 12, step 8, ends with this statement. The real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. So if I'm focused on how I can show up and how I can do things better, and my other big favorite word, forgiveness. So heaven sent me the step work 4 through 9, that 10 step. I do it daily. Use the app. It's an OA toolkit app for your phone. Oh, I love it, because I could do a spot check inventory whenever I need to. And I have needed to do that a lot in my recent time, because I'm also looking for an apartment and I might have to find a job. And let's just say, life is like, I got nothing, but I have never had so much peace. And I don't have anybody to blame, but I can definitely claim responsibility for showing up, putting this program up front, and listening and relying to my higher power. Meditate, meditate, meditate. Pray, but listen. And the key is listen. I was really good at telling and asking. And I just wanted to throw everything out somewhere else. But it's my responsibility. But it isn't my responsibility for the outcome. That's whatever it's supposed to be. And I don't even know what it is.
Time's up.
I trust. Thanks,
Donna.
Thank
you, dear. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. And we're moving on to Freedom 9, Freedom from Fear of People. And we're going to hear from Gittle again. Thank you, Gittle.
Hi, everybody. So freedom from fear of people, so perfect for me. Definitely the foundation of my addiction. So huge. I mean, I had been overweight my whole life, and I was such a people pleaser. I didn't even know it. I didn't even know my feelings. I didn't know, you know, because whenever I always needed to be happy. I needed all the people around me to be happy for sure. and their moods affected my mood. And I was very fearful of friction, fearful of people being upset with me. And the second anything happened, I didn't even know any of that was there, because I was just always eating. So it all just went away. Maybe felt it for a second, but I didn't even know it was there. I was Miss Easygoing, happy-go-lucky. You know, I would get comments from people saying, you know, it doesn't matter that you're, you know, 100 pounds, 120 pounds overweight, because you're just jolly happy. You know, you're always just so happy. And that was that food drunk. You know, I was just drunk on the food. I didn't even know what was behind it. So I really saw all this when I stopped eating. Mm-hmm. I became miserable when I stopped eating. Before I was really working the steps. And that was like, you know, they say the worst place to be. So just connecting it to the step, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I feel that the hugest part of this is really, you know, living this day to day. You know, it's not a one time, oh, I made my amends in my step 9. I got to step 9. I made my amends. This is living amends, you know, This is all my patterns that I found when I did my step 9, the fears that came up in my relationships that caused all my resentments, what my part was. I say it's clearing off my side of the street. And, you know, really living how God would want me to. But it's really changing things going forward, you know, not doing all the things that I did in the past. So, you know, I was a huge apologizer. Like I would do something, then I would apologize, and then I would do something, and then I would apologize. And I still find myself doing that sometimes, you know. And so, you know, like I was reading the OA 12 and 12, and it says, to mend something means to change it. And we amend our past by changing our behavior for the future. And that's what is really my work day in and day out, you know. And I'll just give like some examples now, you know. I was thrown, you know, I was 19 weeks pregnant. And then all of a sudden I had, you know, my baby was basically almost out. Miracle. They were able to get the baby back in. But I'm bed rest. I have 4 children. And I was thinking that, you know, fear of people for me today, like it's a miracle today. I have 4 children downstairs in the snowstorm. One I hear downstairs shooting a basketball, another one screaming, just being able to sit here calmly and peacefully upstairs in my room and not being scared that someone's going to come banging and screaming on the door. And I was just not able to do anything. So I had, you know, they say, you know, it takes a village to do with what one mom can do. I just had so many people coming in and doing different things and doing it all differently than I would have wanted them to do it. I'm also like to give. My natural, like, as a people pleaser is just give. Don't take, don't ask people for things. And it was a whole shift. Just a miracle of this program to be able to know what my fears were, you know, when my mother-in-law would come in and see that the kids threw their laundry on the floor, and she'd start saying like, what are you kids doing? Like, pick up your laundry. Your mom's going to end up doing it. And that's really dangerous, you know? And I would be sitting there like, oh, with this fear, like fear of, you know, my kids being, you know, not having the relationship that I would like them to have with their grandmother, fear of I'm not good enough, because if I would have trained them the right way, then they wouldn't be throwing their stuff on the floor. You know, so just every day in and day out, you know, living with knowing that there's a fear there when something comes up, dealing with it, saying, you know, higher power, how would you have me be here? And changing what I would have done in the past, you know, whether it would have been, you know, not saying anything and just swallowing it and then being upset, you know, and I am able to say, you know, like, mom, you know, he's really, really sensitive. You know, can you just say, can you pick your stuff up from the floor instead of, you know, the whole judgment, this is disgusting, you know, I think it'll get them to react better if you do it that way than them feeling bad and mad at you.
Get a minute warning.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay. So it's just changing the way I've been doing things in the past. And also so usually, and so connected to my other, you know, freedom, you know, it's, people are God's messengers. They're people, you know, like my whole view of what people are changed in this room, you know, they're, you know, my higher power, I call God, we're God's children, and no one can do anything to me without God willing it. And people just have a different power than they used to, because they're just people. I'm human. They're human. They're going to make mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes. They're going to do things that way. And if it happened, then that's what my higher power wanted. So if my kids are being screamed at by someone, I don't have control over that for whatever reason. That's what my higher power wanted. And that's their journey, not mine. So I don't have to be in control of all of that. And that's the gift of this program, just doing it one day at a time, making sure to see what my part is and what can my next right step be.
time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gittle. And now we're moving on to Freedom 10, Freedom from Complacency, and we're going to hear from Christina again. You're on.
Thank you so much. Miss Donnelly, would you give me a minute when it's a minute left? Thank you so much.
You got it.
Okay. Well, step 10 says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. One of our members who passed away, Richie Kay, beautiful man, would always recite the 10 step like that. The most important word in that sentence for me is promptly. It's hard sometimes to make apologies, but I have seen in my own home, walls melt with those simple words, I'm sorry. I have learned to clean things up right away because when I don't, I have something on my conscience, and then I have no peace in my heart. I think growing a soul is a lifelong journey. We're innocent when we come here. We don't know what the problem is. No one ever identified compulsive eating the way our people in OA can. For me, there was a hole in my heart that I was trying to fill with food, and I'm grateful for everybody that went before me and shared their journey. When you get to step 10, you've done a lot of work. You've done the fourth and fifth steps, taken a look at your character defenses in 6 and 7, done 8 and 9 to try and make things right. And that takes perseverance. But the work continues in a different way in step 10. It takes effort and persistence to change my reactions to a lifetime of living. That may start with the fifth step, but it's up to me to be active with this program. I have to put some energy into my program every day to keep what I have gotten. If not, I'm going to feel stale. I have to do the daily disciplines every day I have developed as a result of working these steps. I'm in a step study right now for 15 weeks where the leader is requiring that we read and write on the meditation books every morning. We do a food plan. We do an action plan. We write down gratitudes in addition to our step work for the week. And I'm liking the order this brings to my morning, and I do it every day, no matter what, because I appreciate having that seat in the big book study. And if I want what that person has, I have to follow directions. And, you know, at the end of the 15 weeks, I'll see what of those things works for me. Instead, it says in step 10, we need to repeat every day the actions that brought us so much healing. When I read that, I usually say to myself, even when it's boring, my brain will tell me, I got this. But unless I'm looking at how I'm relating to other people, I don't have any proof of that. A few times a week, I do a step 10, which asks if I've been kind to others. Did I fall short? Do I owe an apology? Did I help anybody today? Was I thinking of what I could do for others? And a friend of mine brought to my attention a step 10 sheet that put on the end, who needs my love today and who needs my prayers today? I thought that was beautiful. So I'm trying to live each day the best way I can and enjoy everything that God has put there for me. They also have phone apps for the step 10s. One that I've used and liked would ask you a few simple questions and give you a score. One day I got 88%, the next day I got 38%. So it just kind of showed me I need to watch my step. What is useful about any of these is that they make me look at my behavior. Am I contributing to the world? If you need to build your self-esteem, you need to do esteemable acts. Nobody needs to know it but me, but I need to know it. Step 10 also helps me put into words those feelings that sometimes run on the statement that can erupt when I'm overwhelmed. Sometimes, as a result of doing it, I realize I don't need to go faster. I need to sit down and be quiet. I've heard that the first 6 steps are about what went wrong, and 7 to 12 are about learning to live better. Ed Koch, when he was a mayor, he used to say, how am I doing? So step 10 is my own version of how I'm doing. The 10th step pushes us to use the character defense list we came up with. and choose another path. When I, the last time I did this, I made a list. These were the character defenses, and this was a preferable way to live. So instead of critical, I could live and let live, be fair and kind. Instead of being intolerant, I could be fair, patient, and charitable. This list is helpful to me when life is hard. I can look at it and say, okay, I was jealous today. How can I be generous tomorrow? I was immature today. How can I act like there's a grown-up on board tomorrow? In the AA 12 and 12, it says that true humility and an open mind can help us to find faith. I think this is a prescription for learning anything. Thanks, sweetie. True humility means that I'm neither above or below anybody else. My opinion is not more right than yours. It takes so much pressure off me when I live that way. I think that as you use the steps over and over, life becomes a spiritual experience. And I need an attitude of openness to help me learn what I need to do. So coming to OA taught me how to practice these skills. I practice first with the people in the program and then with my family and others. I'm grateful every day for the people that gave me their time. Thanks. I pass.
Thank you so much, Christina. How am I doing? All right, moving on to Freedom 11. Paolo will speak again on the freedom from loneliness.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paolo. I'm still compulsive. So loneliness. Loneliness is actually, it's a very debilitating thing that I found in my early life, but I do believe that loneliness is a state of mind. I remember being in a meeting early years ago, and there was a woman who was sharing, and she was an only child, and she said, "I was so lonely as a child," she'd say, and she would share about that. And I'd think to myself, I came from this big Italian family. There were cousins coming in and out of the house, like down the street, four of us in the house. And I felt just as lonely as she described. So it's a state of mind. And it was part of that spiritual, that malady that I was looking, that hole in my heart, which was part of my illness. And I think if I was to look back and as I said, it wasn't an external thing that was experiencing. A lot of the loneliness that I feel or felt was internal and had to do with a lot of, it had to do with, I thought, like, I'll give you an example of one of the most profound feelings of loneliness that I actually was able to overcome as a result of this program. A lot of writing, a lot of therapy, staying abstinent and confronting, and I'm now free of, is, so I described earlier that I had a traumatic childhood experience, and I was one of four children who experienced this. And so in my mind, I had a lot of self-pity, and that, how could this have happened to me? And why did this not happen to anybody else? These were the kind of those unconscious questions that I would ask growing up. And this did separate me from them in my own thoughts. And more importantly, I felt a great sense of loneliness because I thought that I didn't deserve my mother's love the way that my brothers and my sister did. And this lived with me for, this was like that underlying, deeply rooted sense that I had most of my life. And it was debilitating. Because every action that I took, everything that I did, everything that I thought was kind of rooted in that. And I wasn't able to live in, like, to my full potential, because the truth of the matter is that I realize this now, but, at who I am as a person and how God wants me to be, I'm really gregarious, and I love to be around people. And the fact is, like I said, it's not an external thing, but it's the sense from within that I love being around people and I want to be connected. And
that's very profound and super, super important to me. So I did a lot of work on this. It was, it did not happen overnight. But ultimately, that sense of loneliness, especially with this example that I'm using with my family, it did eventually get lifted. And I think it was a series of just this realization that I was as, you know, worthy as everybody else of my mother's love. And that, you know, what happened to me wasn't going to define me as a person. There's many facets to who I am. You know, I'm not just a compulsive overeater. I'm not just a child who was hurt. You know, there's so much more to who I am. And so once I fully realized that, I started to really be filled with more of that being available to open myself up to these kind of relationships. And it just made everything so much more genuine and authentic and really feeling connected. You know how the big book, I think somewhere it says, like being able to really look someone in the eyes, like, and having that sense of connection. And thanks to this program, I've been able to really kind of feel that and be free from that sense of loneliness. And, you know, this particular, this is about step 11 that I'm speaking about. And this step talks about prayer and meditation and conscious contact with God, right? That this is a requirement that we have, right? It's a spiritual solution that we're here learning in order to, you know, have this reprieve from our eating disorders. But ultimately, I have to cultivate that relationship with God and have had to, because my life, quite truthfully, like depends on it. You know, my abstinence depends on my relationship with God and my prayer and meditation. And so, you know, I've got a busy life, a lot of like everybody else. And so it doesn't always come easy, but it makes all the difference in the next 24 hours. You know, like if I was to sit and just get quiet and just pray and just talk to God, not even sometimes in a real formal prayer, and then just get quiet and listen to what's there. And that kind of opens me up to just more fulfillment and truth to what is really in front of me for the day. And then also the connections with other humans. So that is an extremely important thing. It's you know, this conscious contact, the meditation, the quietness, the prayer that I've had to learn here in order to, you know, live this life that I'm intended to live, you know, that God intends for me, you know, like, and not what this illness has me kind of pigeonholed into. So anyway, that's fine. Thank you, Donna. I'll end with that. So I do thank God that I do feel, you know, one of many amongst compulsive overeaters. I'm one of many wives. I'm you know, one of many workers, and I'm one of many God's children. So I'm very thankful to kind of be conscious and understanding of that. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Paula. And now moving on to Freedom 12, we're going to hear again from Lust talking about freedom from the lack of purpose. Unmute Lust.
Am I unmuted? Okay, good. My name is Lusk. I am still a compulsive overeater and a food addict. Freedom from lack of purpose. Man, I looked at that and I'm thinking, wow, what a subject. Let me think about this. But you know what? It turns out to be very interesting looking into this. 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Spiritual awakening. You know, for quite a while in OA, I didn't connect with the fact that this disease is a spiritual disconnect, right? I've always had a higher power in my life. When did I ever disconnect from my higher power? I mean, that really wasn't anything that I was too concerned about until one day I thought about it and I really took a look at my life. I can tell you exactly when, where, and how I separated from my higher power, right? And it was a strong, strong separation. And part of my the reason that my higher power has put me in OA is to remedy that separation, to remedy that split that took place. Lack of purpose has always been a part of my life before recovery. I think of as my addictive life, right? My life before. Lack of purpose was a huge part of that. I've thought about lack of follow through, procrastination, lack of planning. All these things were part of my life. Lack of follow through. Okay, you know, I'll get around to it. Procrastination. Well, maybe tomorrow, you know. Lack of planning. Well, it'll take care of itself. I still see these things in me. But you know what? Again, with the help of this program and through the grace of my higher power, I can recognize them when I see them. And when I see them, I know what I'm looking at and I can take action. You know, I have tools. I have all kinds of things I can do. I can surrender them. But I recognize them and I know what to do. And that to me is a wonderful feeling. That's a tremendous feeling in my life. Voices of Recovery says, those of us who live this program, don't simply carry the message. We are the message. Each day that we live well, we are well, and we embody the joy of recovery. I think each one of us carries a message. I think that, I know in my case, I've carried the message to my doctor. I've carried the message to my chiropractor, or my, I'm sorry, orthopedist. I've carried the message to other members of OA just through conversations, right? Just through them showing some interest in what's happening with me and what's going on with my program. I also think, when I think about lack of purpose, I also think that for me, it's not a question of lack of purpose, it's lack of good purpose, lack of positive purpose. There's always been a lot of negative purpose in my life. As I say, you know, a lot of negative things, you know, were important to me because I was living that life where I controlled everything. I managed everything, and deep down I knew that things were wrong, but I would fix them. And of course I never could. I never, ever could. When I talk about weight, I think about Weight Watchers program I was in for years. They say the same thing as OA. The Weight Watchers says it's a lifestyle, not a diet. OA says it's a lifestyle, not a diet. But Weight Watchers says get on the scales. OA says, change your life. And this is the way to do it. That to me is just, it's incredible. Okay. One of the great things that happened to me as a result of OA and as a result of this program, my sister lives in Arkansas. And I haven't seen them for about 4 years. We stay in contact by phone a lot. And I was talking to her one day, just right in the middle of the conversation, she said, you know, she said, you're not as angry as you used to be. She's not in program. She doesn't know about program. She just made that comment. That's got to be the greatest thing that anyone has ever said to me, because it came from a source that's not familiar with program, right? It came from someone on the outside who knows me well, who observed that I had changed, right? That's exciting. That is exciting. But you know, getting back to the 12 steps, right? That change is exciting, but I'm not going to continue to change unless I reach out to others, right? Unless I keep things going. One of the shares previously talked about basically that, you know, as I'm not going to recover unless we all recover. I'm not going to move forward in recovery unless we're all moving forward in recovery, right? It's interesting. It's kind of like it's an individual thing, but it's also very much a group thing. That's why I love the group. I need the group, you know, in my life. Let's see. People-pleasing. Someone else also mentioned people-pleasing. We were from a very people-pleasing environment. You might want to read Codependence. You might want to read Insanity. But I mean, the codependence was extreme. So we're both from an environment where there's a lot of caring. I mean, people got along well, but everything depended on how are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, this stuff. And it became the only thing that was important. I know growing up, that caused me some issues. And they say growing up in an environment like that is very difficult. Today, I put myself first. And I don't feel guilty about it. You know, I don't feel there's anything wrong with that. Putting myself first is fine, right? As long as I do it for the right reason. And the more I help myself, the better I get, the more those around me are going to benefit, right?
1 minute warning.
It's okay. It's okay for me to be number one. Thank you very much. Thanks, Donna.
Welcome.
Also, just real briefly, this moves also into the area of service. Okay. We're going to serve, if we're going to serve other compulsive overeaters, if we're going to serve other people in our lives, and this is a service program, okay, we have to be sure and incorporate the service principle in our lives. And of course, service is one of our tools. Anyway, these are just some ideas I had, and I think I'm about out of time. So thanks, guys. I really enjoyed being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Les.